swept, meaning that sex workers education and advocacy task force. That's the group of people that we're meeting. I'm sure some of us are going to be asking ourselves questions as to why are we meeting SWET, because there's no legal status for them in South Africa, and in fact there's no law that allows them to do what they're doing in South Africa. But we thought it was important, as this HIV and AIDS standing committee, that if we are oversighting over a situation that is HIV and AIDS, and there are some abuses that can result into people getting HIV and AIDS, anybody who seems to be affected to perpetuate HIV and AIDS in South Africa, we need to sit down and talk to them and hear whether there is something that can be done to affect that situation. Because some of these reasons that they've given us before we call them, some of the things that are happening to them actually tell us that it's beyond their control, and in fact it can actually perpetuate HIV and AIDS. So we thought that if we want to contain HIV and AIDS in South Africa, there's one group that we need to talk to. So we'll call them to come here today and talk to them and listen to them as to what is going on, so that if we've got any recommendations, we'll make those recommendations. Or if there are any suggestions that we need to make, we can make. And in fact, they are coming to one of the top structures of the country, which is Parliament, which is where we don't only do oversight, we actually make laws to transform what's happening in South Africa. If we think that HIV and AIDS is a problem in South Africa, it's killing people, and there are certain things that we need to do, the onus is on us as South African Parliament to change the laws, or to make laws that would be able to protect South African citizens from anything that would kill, would actually kill them, kill us in South Africa. So that's why we got them. We're hoping that we're not going to be very long. We know it's a Friday, and some of you probably might have thought that they're going to be in Joburg, a definite enough for your money. I'm sorry that you're not there. It's unfortunate because we've got this work to do. But if there's something they call in Tosa Ubegilija, maybe can have an Ubegilija later on. So, but I thank you for actually attending, members. Before we go to them, I would like the members to introduce themselves as who they are. And you can say what is your name, and then after that we'll allow them to introduce themselves. I don't think they're all here. But those who are carrying the presentation are already here with us. We'll start with you, Mr. Khalid Isai.
Good morning. My name is Mr. Khalid Isai, member of the Health Code Polway in the National Assembly.
My name is Thabo Makunene. I'm in the National Council of Provinces and COP, and I come from Limpopo.
Morning, my name is Rebecca Mosepe. I'm a member of Health Committee, National Assembly.
Good morning all, my name is Dennis Joseph. I'm a member of the National Council of Province, but I'm standing in for member Patricia Kopani.
Good morning everybody, my name is Michael De Villiers. I'm from the NCLP and the Select Committee of Health.
Hello, my name is Hilda Cesarele Mzweli. I'm the member of this committee. Thank you.
I am Vivian Kobana. Welcome, Mr. Joseph. We hope that you'll be able to give over whatever that needs to be given over to the member of this committee. We've got other people, we've got our researcher, Moses mother sitting at the back there. There are communications people. I don't know what they want to communicate, but they are here. They want to communicate. I've got to feel that the next in the two secretaries from NCOP and from the National Assembly. So we give over to you to tell us about your situation and the challenges that you have.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members. Thank you for coming today. It sounds like you had other commitments also, and we appreciate you making yourself available for this meeting. I'd like to apologise in advance for my colleagues who will be arriving just a little bit late. They have some transport problems this morning, but they will be joining us, and I'll introduce themselves when they're here. Next to me is Maria Stacey, and I am Sally Shackleton. I'm a director of WET, and Maria is the National Program Manager and the Deputy Director of WET. My colleagues who will be joining me are from the Sisonke Sex Workers Movement, and they're also peer educators at WET, so they have a lot of first-hand experience to share with you. We're going to be giving you some presentations. We also hope to engage with you about any questions that you might have, any concerns that you might have, and just to have an open engagement. So please do feel free to ask us any questions, even if we don't cover them in our presentation. So what we wanted to do today is firstly we wanted to present to you what we know about sex workers, what research has shown us. Then we wanted to have a presentation by the Sisonke Sex Worker Movement, because one of our strong beliefs is that we need to be talking to sex workers directly, and that sex workers' voices are very important in this discussion. So we wanted to give them time to respond and to talk to you directly. And then I'll be telling you a little bit more about the South African National AIDS Council National Sex Worker Program, which we have been developing over the last couple of months, and which is a really important, very, very important progress in delivering services to sex workers and addressing HIV, AIDS among sex workers, their clients, and their partners. So I'm going to hand over to Maria to deliver the first presentation, and then we'll have some questions afterwards.
Good morning, honourable members, and good morning, Dr. Gokwana. It's our second time to meet with you, and thank you very much for being so open-minded in attempting to understand some of these very complex issues regarding sex work and HIV. Sex work is an under-researched area, but we are starting to be involved in research ourselves, and the body of evidence is starting to grow. And there's been quite a lot of activity in the area over the last year or two. So what I'm wanting to present to you today is an outline of some of the research, especially pertaining to sex workers and HIV, and also outline our national sex work program that WET is implementing, funded by the Global Fund, and what some of our learnings have been. As I said, it's a very complex issue, but I'm attempting to simplify and to draw out some of the main issues. Firstly, let's look at the definition. This is very important. What is sex work? Is any agreement between two or more persons?
Sorry, I don't have the presentation. I've got a lot of papers, but it's not in the presentation. It's not here.
Okay. So some people have got it.
Then you don't have the text.
Maybe my what we should do. Let's just look at the screens for now, but if somebody could organize and that would be so that we can both ask somebody to go and photocopy it for us in the meantime while you're presenting them.
Those are the other two presentations. Perhaps when I finish this one, somebody could take the memories, they can go and print it.
You don't have a free copy. You don't
have a free copy.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay, when you finish, then you can direct copy. Okay, can you accept that member?
Okay. Your apologies for that. Okay, so definition of sex work, any agreement between two or more persons in which the objective is exclusively limited to sexual act and ends with that, and which involves preliminary negotiations for a price. So there's a distinction between that and marriage contracts, sexual patronage, an agreement concluded between lovers that could include presents in kind or money, which I guess is what we would call transactional sex, but whose value has no connection with the price of the sexual act, and the agreement does not depend exclusively on sexual services. Okay. So, just to be clear, I know that there's a lot of concern around transactional sex and HIV, and there certainly are, there is a lot of overlap between sex work and transactional sex, but sex work is very much, it has its distinct characteristics and its distinct risks. Just a bit of background. As you know, sex work is illegal in South Africa under the Sexual Offences Act of 1957 and the amendment of 2007, which criminalises all aspects of sex work, both the buying, the selling, and brothel keeping and associated activities. But despite their vulnerability, sex workers remain a largely invisible, inadequately served, and marginalised, stigmatised population. They obviously face many health risks, not least of which is HIV and STIs, violence, and obstacles in getting access to healthcare, legal recourse, and social services. Okay, so to come to some of the research that Swin's been involved in recently, how many sex workers are there in South Africa? We are a member of the SANAC Technical Working Group on Sex Work, and at the beginning of this year they commissioned us to do a national population size estimation study, which came up with an intermediate estimate of 153,000 sex workers in South Africa, which includes female, male, and transgender sex workers. This size estimation was based on enumerations conducted at 12 sites, and we worked closely with the CSIR, Geospatial Mapping Unit, and we've come up with a size estimation, a range of size estimations for every town in South Africa and every province. I'm going to show you the next slide. Okay. This just shows you the breakdown of sex workers per province. As you can see, Gauteng has the greatest concentration of sex workers at 22%, followed by KZN at 16%, Western Cape at 11%, and Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, Northwest, and Mpopa all at 10%, and then Free State and Northern Cape in smaller concentrations. This is the breakdown of the numbers per province. So 32,000 in Gauteng, and it ranges down to 5,400 in the Northern Cape. Okay, what do we know about sex work and HIV? As I said at the beginning, there's very, very poor data considering the burden of disease, and it really is an under-researched area internationally, but actually especially in South Africa. This is starting to be remedied now. Last year, The Lancet brought out a paper looking at a systematic review of HIV prevalence amongst sex workers in low and middle income countries. And South Africa had, I think, the second highest of all the countries which they surveyed, a prevalence rate of 59.6%, which is really quite shockingly high. The NSD says that nearly 20% of new infections are sex work related. Of those, 5.5% are sex workers themselves, the remainder being their clients and the clients' sexual partners. And yet, only 5% of sex workers have access to HIV prevention services. Now, that stat of 5% was from a publication about 2 years ago, so we hope to have improved on that by now. What is our approach to dealing with sex work and HIV? The core element is that our work is peer-driven outreach and development. In other words, sex workers themselves provide us with information and are the heart and soul of the work. We address sex workers' health through individual and group interventions, information, counselling, referrals, dialogue. Importantly, because a lot of programs fall short here, we address contextual and structural impediments to healthcare like stigma, discrimination, and criminalisation. We respect sex workers' choices to remain in the industry or transition out of the industry. The question often comes up, do you do exit programs? And a lot of people assume that all sex workers, if they were given the choice, would want to exit the profession. But this is actually not the case. Despite the challenges, despite the dangers, despite the risks, there are many benefits to being in the industry. And perhaps some of my colleagues can speak about that at a later stage and answer your questions about that. But for those who do want to exit, either because they do find it traumatic or too stressful or too risky, or because they're getting older and the, you know, the income is not what it used to be, we provide individualized, realistic support for those wanting to exit. We started in Cape Town in 1995 as a small safer sex project, and our Cape Town program has really grown, and we now see the innovation laboratory where we introduce new interventions and evaluate them, and then we roll them out and cascade them to our other partner organizations. Share our experience with stakeholders through sensitization and training. We don't have all the skills. We don't have medical skills. We don't have legal skills. So we enter into strategic partnerships with organizations like Women's Legal Center to provide human rights defense for sex workers, and with TB HIV Care Association, who assist us with HIV screening and medical care and primary health care for sex workers. We host SONCARE, the South African Sex Worker Movement, as well as the African Sex Worker Alliance, which is an alliance of sex worker organizations in approximately 11 or 12 African countries. So our belief, we do a lot of advocacy, is that adult consensual sex work should be decriminalized as both a human rights and a public health issue. Okay, just to come on to our national sex work program, we're around 9 recipients of Global Fund Civil Society grant. Since April 2011 until March 16, it's a 5-year funding period, we're responsible for implementing a national sex work program aimed at HIV prevention of sex workers. So we coordinate the program. At the moment, we sub-grant to 8 organizations in 6 provinces. So it started out as a small program. Thanks to the successes, and thanks also to the intervention of South African National AIDS Council, we're now expanding probably to 56 sites from October onwards. This is where our sub-recipients are at the moment. Messina, Rustenburg, Johannesburg, Barberton, Durban, East London, George, Beaufort West, and the head office in Cape Town. Essentially, these are the components of the national program. As I said, peer education. Peer education to outreach, distribute condoms, engage with sex workers. Sex workers are very hard to reach, or they have the reputation of being hard to reach, by professional healthcare services. It's very important to have sex worker peer educators reaching out to other sex workers. Provide counseling, provide support, document human rights abuses, refer to clinics, and follow up referrals to clinics. And if a sex worker is experiencing problems with access to services, the peer educator will actually escort the person to the clinic. We do regular risk reduction and creative space workshops, which is a part educational workshop, part safe space, part support group, which is very important for building a sense of collective identity. We also do ACT. We have a national toll-free helpline. Sex workers, we get about 400-450 calls a month from all over the country from multiple concerns. And then we also do a lot of training and sensitization. This is the poster advertising helpline. This is actually the Sisonke National Coordinator model here. Okay. So Global Fund funded us to evaluate the first 2 years of the program last year. We used the opportunity also to do a survey of sex work in the country, given the lack of data that there had been. So we surveyed 1,136 sex workers. Also, as you probably know, South Africa has to report to on UNGAS indicators, the Global AIDS Progress Report, on a regular basis, and some of the indicators relate to sex work. Until now, South Africa has had no data to report on the sex work indicators. So we also wanted to be able to get some of that data so that we would know, so that South Africa would be able to report. Okay. As I said, we surveyed 1,136 sex workers at 7 sites. So the breakdown of gender was 91% female, 5% male, and 4% transgender female. 63% of the respondents were over 25, 34% aged 18 to 25, and 3% under 18, which I think is probably quite surprising, and it goes against some of the stereotypes of the majority of sex workers being very, very young. Of course, that 3% under 18 is definitely a cause for concern. It's probably higher, seeing as it's based on self-report. But nevertheless, I think there's often a perception that there's a lot of child prostitution, and I think it's probably less than the fears would have us believe. We ask sex workers where you pick up your clients. The reason that if you look at the percentages, they add up to more than 100% is because some people pick up from more than one area. So the majority were from streets, next from bars and shebeens, 27% from brothels, 13% from truck stops, 12% worked at home. We ask sex workers, have you experienced violence in the last 12 months? And if so, by who? We were quite surprised, because we know there's a high level of violence, but in the last year, I think it was about 54% said they'd experienced physical violence. So that was actually less than we'd anticipated. Probably if you asked about lifetime experience of violence, it would be much higher, near 100%. And again, this would add up to more than 100%, because some people reported violence from more than one source. But 57% reported violence from clients, and 55% from police or law enforcement, 29% from an intimate partner, 70% from other sex workers, and only 8% pimps or managers, which again I think goes counter to the perception that the majority of sex workers are controlled by pimps and managers who are very violent and exploitative. Okay, we asked, did you use a condom last time you had sex with a client? 95% reported yes. Now bear in mind again, this is self-report and people know what the right answer is, but nevertheless, that's high. Did you use a condom last time you had sex with someone who wasn't a client? 81% said yes, so that's a bit of a red flag. There's less condom use with intimate partners. Have you had an HIV test in the past 12 months? 88%. Do you know your HIV status? 92% said yes. That's pretty good. That shows good coverage of HCT campaigns. Have you had symptoms of an STI in the past 12 months? 46% said yes. That's also quite a cause of concern. And have you experienced physical violence in the past 6 months? That's 54%. Finally, on the impact, fortunately for us, we did find that sex workers who had been exposed to our program had higher condom use and had better knowledge on HIV prevention. So what have we learned from our national program? First of all, you have to have peer educators who are sex workers. That we can get there's a lot of funding, there's a lot of concern obviously around HIV at the moment. You can use HIV prevention as a vehicle to address holistic personal development for sex workers. And when you do that, conversely, you achieve multiple outcomes which address HIV risk. So for example, a sex worker who has better self-esteem, who knows about her rights, who's aware of gender-based violence, who is able to address substance abuse, is able to address the multiple risks which determine HIV. And specifically, addressing gender-based violence increases the success of HIV prevention programs among sex workers by 25%. We found that risk reduction workshops, outreach alone isn't enough. You need to have those risk reduction workshops to deepen the understanding and to build that collective identity. Structural activities, addressing the structural drivers of HIV is very important, empowering sex workers, strengthening sex worker community, and framing sex work as work. A lot of organizations are constrained for addressing the legal status of sex work because a lot of them are funded by the US government and have to sign the anti-prostitution pledge, but nevertheless, human rights defense and access to justice are essential components. That's my presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Maria. I'm not aware that there's another presentation that is good. Oh, okay. All right, tomorrow, okay. Members will ask questions. Let's just talk down. Let's just continue with your presentation.
I'd actually just invite my colleagues who have arrived to introduce themselves just quickly so that you know who you're speaking to. And then I'd like to speak to us.
Thank you, Chair, and I'd like to say to everyone inside the house, thank you for giving me this opportunity to do the Benjamin, where I'm an organizer of the Song Initiative. Today I would like to present my movement, and I've been in the sex industry for more than 8 years. I would like to present why sex workers don't live in issues of HIV. I'll count it at three. First of all, what makes sex workers on high risk in HIV? It's criminalization, discrimination, and human rights violation. Why I say it? Because of criminalization. This law is opening lots of doors from abuse throughout police experience police brutality, where police confiscate condoms from sex workers and don't allow them to take medication when they arrest them on Friday until Monday, so they're not allowed to take their ARVs. Yeah, it's over. We're mobilizing because of police brutality, discrimination from healthcare providers, discrimination from other services providers. As I count police brutality, what we sex workers we experience more than everything because of when we're taking condoms, sex workers they can't work without condoms. And they have to work without condom. And also police ask sex workers sexual favors. They force them to do it without condom and taking money from them. When I'm talking discrimination, I'm talking about when sex worker is very difficult to go on to say first to the clinic, to say openly, to say that I'm a sex worker. Because we find ourselves that if I'm telling the lady that I'm a sex worker, I'll be like they're making a joke of it. Discrimination from the community. Sex workers, they have difficulties in the location where you're a sex worker. Some of other people, they don't want our children to play with their children. They fear us. Also, they diminish our houses. They say because we are a sex worker, we have to go in that particular place. But this only has done to mobilize them. We don't need sex workers to organize to raise their issues. We mobilize our sex workers to be empowered themselves, to be free to speak ourselves, to stand up and fight for our rights. And we create a set of European communities where sex workers feel safe and supported. We listen to sex workers, and the sex foundation knows that nothing about us without us. We are the experts of the sex workers' issues. Allow us to share information with you. What we do with us, what I can say, I like telling all of the members to do and understand our situation. Under discrimination, we are a big risk. We find ourselves as we are not human beings. We find ourselves like we not exist. But as we see something, we are still believe that we are the human beings. We need to be protected by everyone. As Constitution South Africa said that we need to be protected in safety. In terms of HIV, we are the experts of this because we like to use condom. We always use condom. But we can't use the condom because the least they take is the evidence that you are a sex worker. We can't go with the condom in your pocket or you have to hide it if you're working in the street. Because you don't even in the brothels. They go inside and take the condom there. We're in the high risk. We need to take this in a serious way. To take this because we are the women of South Africa. We're in the high risk. This law of criminalization is put us in every risk. We're experiencing the different things. In the world, in the brothels. In the world, this gives also power, discrimination gives also managers to force us to work even though in a period of time. Even they are pregnant too, they have to work. If they go to the clinic for their health, the manager would not build those buildings, not to come back to work. Civilization put all of us in the high risk. We like to protect ourselves. We like to work as much as a team, chapter, owners, and sisters are doing outreaches every time, and we educate them to use and to use the condom. Why is it important to use condom? If the condom is fake, it's not important for us to go to the community and say, yesterday my client has been doing a business and then the condom burst. It's not easy. They are scared. We are scared. My conclusion is, can she take this in the first priority and first responsibility in South Africa to get this, to change this law, because it's opening a lot of doors of abuse and human rights violation. At the end, what we believe is okay. We believe what we're doing is so historic. It's where our budget is there. We are really against the off trafficking and children underage exploitation of children into the sex industry. Because the criminalization does not allow us to work hand to hand with police and report all those cases. We find ourselves even involved by 20 times. We can't go and report that. To make an example, I've been involved by 6 guys. But it was difficult for me to go and report these guys. Because if I'm going there, it would be like a job. And other than they take me in the cells and say what I'm doing is crime. But what we're trying to do, we're not trying. We do it because it's work. We believe it's work. I know that some of the people, they don't understand. They ask me lots of questions that how do you fit to be a sex worker? But if everyone is a person, if they decide to make choices, we need to believe that. We need to trust that. We need to support and give that person a support. It's the way he is. What is working for me, maybe it's not working for you. That trust that I choose, maybe you will not choose. But let's support each other. We need really a support. We do have some sex workers that they are not positive. They are negative. But you still have fear of those sex workers will become positive. Because of this polarization. And this law is also get a deadline to take advantage of sex workers. Because they know that in South Africa, to sell in sex is crime. But I don't feel like that. I don't see even a government believing in each person. But the Constitution of South Africa says we have the rights of our dignity. We have the right to choose any occupation or profession. We have the right as a human being. I will be happy this commitment to something, make a change. Work with us. Anything you can ask us to assist you. Not only if doors are open, I will be happy if your own doors also open for us. We are the parents. Thank you very much.
Thank you, madam. Can you switch off this other one? Continue with the presentation, sir.
Just one more.
Okay.
Sorry, members, we'll give you a chance to ask questions in just a minute. We wanted to just give you an overview of the National Sex Work Program that is currently being developed with the SANEP. I'm going to go through it quite quickly. Forgive me if I do rush through it, but I would like to give you an opportunity to ask questions and to engage with us. So this video, I'm going to deal with the program principles, the aims, objectives, and outcomes, the activities that we are hoping to undertake, how we plan to scale up those activities, and a little bit about imminent time frame. So this, we've covered this already,
but I wanted to emphasize that this plan does look at not just service delivery in terms of healthcare, but also a holistic view of sex workers. So we look at the fact that moral judgment, criminalization, stigma, and discrimination also drives marginalization, exclusion, and disempowerment of sex workers, which is an impediment to them accessing services. Sex work is very common, but all aspects of sex work is criminalized, including the buying of sex, so selling sex, buying sex, being a third party involved in a transaction, so brothel owners and so on. Living for the proceeds is also a crime, so technically that would criminalize sex workers as children and parents and so on who sex workers support. And there are also contextual factors that include an intersection of disadvantage that we need to look at. A lack of education, for instance, having to leave school young, being abandoned by partners with children and having to support those children and so on. So there's also an increased vulnerability in those respects. Sex work in South Africa happens in a hostile environment. Because sex work is criminalized, it's often pushed underground into dark alleyways, into spaces where it's easy to exploit those who work in the industry. There's a risk of arrest and extortion. There is no access to legal recourse. As Dudu has mentioned, very few sex workers report violence that they experience. And as you saw earlier from Maria's slide, 53% of sex workers said that they experienced violence from police officers themselves. So they're very, very unlikely to report violence. Of the 57% who experience violence from clients. So those clients are getting away with a lot of abuse and violence without any consequence. There's a lot of rights abuses, including a poor understanding of their rights, including no workplace protections at the moment for sex workers who do work in brothels or in agencies. Like you also said, are subject to a lot of exploitation because they have no workplace protections. The health system currently is unresponsive to sex workers. There's a limited coverage, there's limited provision of commodities. We know that we are distributing condoms, but they are not enough. And in some cases, particularly, there's problems with distribution to sex workers specifically. There's a lot of discrimination by healthcare workers, and this all results in a disproportionately high risk for HIV infection and STI infections, which is a driver. Conditions favoring HIV transmission and unfavorable conditions for good health outcomes for sex workers. We talked about prevalence earlier. Maria told you what the prevalence rate was. We're looking at about 60% versus 25% among non-sex working women between 15 and 49. So to give you a background of the development of the national program, the NSP includes sex work targets. When the sex work symposium took place last year, which was organized by ourselves in collaboration with the National Department of Health and FANAC. We had about 200 people attend that meeting in Johannesburg, and it was really a central point for drawing attention to the issue. Also because it included experts, and among those experts were sex workers themselves. So for the first time, sex workers were in a forum talking to researchers and policy makers, and it was a very positive space for looking at best practice. That resulted in the establishment of the Sex Work Technical Working Group that was a SANEC technical working group that aimed to progress the sex work sector plan. Then we refined our strategies. We wanted to take an evidence-informed response, so we made sure that we had information available to us, so including the size estimation study, which took place this year, so that we knew what the population size was that we needed to address. And at the moment, we're focusing on the M&E framework, which should be completed in the next couple of weeks, and we are going to move on to operationalizing a plan. The principles we used in the development of the plan are that sex workers are equal citizens, they have families, they have a holistic life that we need to address. Sex workers' rights and dignities must be respected. Sex workers are not victims by virtue of being sex workers alone. There are other factors that we need to address, structural drivers that we need to address. Sex work is a livelihood option for those who engage in it. Sex work ownership is incredibly important, like Dudu said, nothing about us without us. we need to take an evidence-informed response. Because this issue is so fraught with a lot of moral and a lot of concerns, we need to really look at evidence and take that as our starting point. Otherwise, we would get bogged down in discussion that would never progress us forward. And I think we really need to take that principle seriously. We should engage in interventions that do not do harm. We should, and that are rather harm reduction programs. We need to, collective sex work engagement, mobilization, and empowerment is essential for our success. As long as sex workers are disempowered, silent, and unable to access their rights, we will not be able to progress this plan. So the aims of the plan are to increase coverage and access to comprehensive HIV, STI, and TB services for sex workers, their partners, and families. This also includes clients. We need to reduce violent and human rights abuses experienced by sex workers. We need to create an enabling health and related systems for the realization of constitutional rights. The objectives are to reduce social and structural barriers, to reduce sexual transmission of HIV among sex workers and STIs, to sustain sex worker health and wellness, to strengthen the health system to respond effectively, and to collect information and research to enable an effective response and also to strengthen our evidence-based response. I'm going to move forward to the logic model. What we basically wanted to do is to ensure that right from inputs all the way through to impact, there's a logical progression. Everything links and we're not having a gap between the inputs, for instance, or the activities and the impact that we want to have. So ultimately, we want to see a decrease in HIV among the general population. We want to see improved sex work health. We want to create an enabling environment. And we want the decriminalization of sex work. Our activities are framed around three contextual factors. So the first context is a high concentration of sex workers in an urban area, which we would frame as hotspot. The second context that we look at for service delivery is in which there is still a high concentration of sex workers, but they are fairly dispersed and probably around a particular client population. So for instance, mining, truckers, military bases, and so on. The third context that we looked at is a sort of generalized context in which there might not be a high concentration of sex workers or a hotspot, but where there are still sex workers and who need services. So like a colleague of mine always says, there is a sex worker in every village, town, and city in South Africa, and they all need access to services. So what we did was we framed our activities around those three contexts. So firstly, we want to provide sex work-specific services. So the Isla Street Clinic in Hillbrow is an example of a sex work-specific clinic that has been very effective in addressing the needs of sex workers. So much so that sex workers travel from as far as Rustenburg to go to that clinic so that they can get stigma-free services and where they can disclose and have open conversations with the healthcare workers. We need to distribute condoms and lubricant. This is very important, not just condoms, but lubricant as well. We need post-exposure prophylaxis. We need STI and TB diagnosis and management, HIV testing, treatment, care, and support, psychosocial services and risk reduction services, referrals for substance abuse. We need to have reproductive and sexual health services. We need to provide IEC materials that are appropriate to sex workers and targeted to sex workers. And we need to create safe spaces and peer-led mobilization. So that basically means that sex workers themselves engage in delivering services to other sex workers. They know the population. They know the issues. They know the culture of sex work, and they are best placed to be able to deliver those services. So secondly, in those sex work hotspots, so that is in the second context where sex workers might be fairly dispersed around a specific population. I think we would like to see mobile services. That we have found is the best way to reach those populations, as well as sex work friendly spaces where sex workers might gather to meet, to talk about their issues, to have safe spaces to express themselves. So that includes the services we mentioned above, but in addition to provide mobile services. So, for instance, in Cape Town itself, we have a wellness center. We have two big mobile vans that can go out and deliver services to sex workers, and we also have workshops at our offices. And then the third context, which has fallen off the bottom of my slide there, is sex work friendly. So in a generalized population, we're looking at sex work friendly clinics. So in other words, we need to do healthcare sensitization so that sex workers access the public health system, but do so in a stigma-free environment and can also be referred to specific services should they need them. So here we go, the ideal service delivery. A clinic which is open till late is appropriate for the needs of sex workers, so not a 9-to-5 or 9-to-4 clinic, but a clinic that is open from until 11 o'clock at night, and that is specifically targeted at the needs of sex workers. And everybody goes. This is the mobile clinic that rides along the route where sex workers might be working from, that might also offer services to the clients of sex workers, and who can provide, for instance, services to truckers or services to miners and so on. It's a very open process, and there we go, some sex workers going to visit the mobile clinic. And then the third context is sex work-friendly services, in which sex workers are able to access stigma-free services. So important is peer-led activities. In Cape Town, we have a team, some of whom you see before you, are peer educators who are delivering services to sex workers. We have a paralegal service as well, so that sex workers might deal with any legal issues they might have, including reporting violence. And going through the criminal justice system if they would like to report violence against themselves. I wanted to highlight what the innovation of this project actually is, of this program is. Firstly, evidence-informed programming. This program aims to address what we know about sex work. It looks at research, what research shows us, and it aims to fill the gaps of what we know. It is about mobilizing and specifically targeted at sex workers. So it's not targeting sex workers just accidentally or not even knowing whether it's reaching the target population or not. And it's fit for purpose and fit for the context. It employs peer sex workers as peer educators. It looks at community strengthening, specifically looking at strengthening sex workers themselves to claim their rights, to participate in programming, to actively participate in their own health and wellness, to upscale successful interventions that have been proven to work, to look at healthcare sensitization, to advocate for a human rights approach and an openness for sex workers. And it is coordinated, so it's a national program that is coordinated. Up until this point, there have been activities that have been happening across the country, but they haven't necessarily been coordinated and we're not adequately learning lessons from the things that work and the things that don't. So basically, monitoring and evaluation will be done at national level through SYNEC, but also at local level, and will include sex workers themselves to evaluate the programs that they are accessing services from. So basically at this point we are looking at the model and we're looking at costing it. We're making sure that there are resources available to roll this out. We're looking at ratifying the program within the sex work sector but also within SANEC itself. And we need to formalize and look at the role of the sex work technical working group so that we can continue to provide support to the program and look at monitoring and evaluating it as it continues. And the other thing that we need to do is to initiate the capacity building and sensitization of healthcare workers and organizations ahead of the scale up so that everybody's ready to undertake the work and they are capacitated to do so. And that's it. So a bit of a rush through of the program, but it is available and I'm happy to share it with you. We do plan to have a sex work sector meeting in June, at the end of June, and we'd be happy to invite members also to engage at that meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarit. Thank you very much. Let's welcome some of the members who joined us a little bit later. Sarit, Sabine, Sisterus, introduce us.
Thank you. I'm Vusele Makakula, a member from Mpumalanga. I'm in this COVID too.
Whoever says that does not have ears.
Okay. That's the preservation members, and I'm sure you'd engage. But that document that we're going to be getting, Mother is going to organize it for us so that we could have a look at it. I think members, as members of parliament, people who are elected, our interest is to make sure that we. People of South Africa live longer, live a lengthy life without problems. So anything that threatens lives of South Africa is what we need to worry ourselves and even probably make laws that would outlaw that particular thing. I'm sure here we must not be misinterpreted as if we are legalizing what has been illegalized. We're not doing that. But after I met them with all the challenges that they had, and if you look at the literature and the presentation of ANAC, you can see there's no doubt about it that where most of the HIV is actually in the sex work. You've seen now 59.9 and the threat is going to 60% is coming from that area. And obviously that threatens longevity of life of South Africans. And if it threatens longevity of life of South Africans, we're going to look into it and ask ourselves, is there something that can be done? The next point is that I think since we were born, we've been aware that there's something that is contraceptive. And it has always been illegal. But for some reason, you look at the statistics, it's actually going up instead of going down. Meaning that the way probably it is done, whatever that they were doing to try and stop it, it's not stopping and it's continuing. And we continue to have side effects, if you could put it that way, that are coming from the fact that it is there. So this is why we thought that it was important to call them and say, tell us what is going on. So that if there's anything that there are any recommendations that can be done, will be done. It is on that basis that we're here today. So your question should revolve around that. As I said, we're not legalizing what is not legal in South Africa, but we just want to know how can we manage some of the challenges that are coming from that and are threatening prolonging life for South Africans. But there's one serious thing which we talked about that day, the day we met, is that sometimes we do things in an asymmetrical society, but we take something that is done somewhere and we do it somewhere in asymmetrical situations, and you hope that the answer is going to be the same. I'm referring to a situation where I know in New Zealand, if there's no criminal things against sex workers. But if you look at New Zealand, you look at their unemployment rate, it's far much different from ours. You look at their poverty gap, it's far much different. They are a developed country, we are not. Now the things that get what, you know, for me to make an informed decision, I need to be stable and be sure of myself. Now, if I'm stressed by the fact that I'm not working, I don't have a job, I don't have 3 meals a day, and somebody comes to me and says, look, here is a job, obviously, with the decision that I'm going to make is not going to be an informed decision, because it's going to be driven by the fact that I'm coming from a very abnormal situation. So these are some of the things that I'm asking myself. Are some of the things not going to interest us? Because if you go to New Zealand, everybody is like you. So I'm not stressed when I make a decision. I know at least I've got a salary. I'm having 3 meals a day. If somebody comes to me, I'll make a decision with that. But if I'm hungry now, I don't know what I'm going to eat tomorrow, and somebody says, there's a job, would I make my own decision being, well, not stressed when I'm making that decision? But remember, that's the presentation. Can we engage with it? I know we're not going to be here for long because it's a Friday, as I said. It's Friday, the corner. Okay, let's start with this one.
Thank you, Chairperson Smiley. Chairperson, is them, they see what pressure they put on us about this thing. Because indeed, they said before, some neighbors, they're not cooperating with them and their children, etc., etc. Now, which there are a number of people outside there who's against this thing. And now they came to us, and then we have to support what number of people outside there not support, as they say. That is question number one. Question number two, Chairperson. Here in South Africa, there is no one who's having a right to go naked in the street. No one. You have. So, as they go to the street or to the road, once maybe they are in the road, they buy to them a sex. How they sleep? How they make sex, not sleep actually. Because really, you can't in the streets make a sex there. If in the road, there is no any shelter there. If there is shelter, somebody else shelter. You don't have a shelter, you are in the road, you are selling it. So you want now to do that. How can you do that? You do that in public, and we said we ask. We have to say, no, that is right. It must happen. No, Chair. Another thing, really, only they said the police are not good on them, so on the us. It was reported several times, and you can get it in the files of the court, that a sex worker, they make an agreement with somebody else. They do sex together. And they do sex together, and then someone didn't pay. And then the sex worker just go to the police, the very same police that you said they are not cooperating. You don't say that person you agreed with. You say this person was raiding me. So it also happened on your side, and you don't speak about it. Another thing I want to know, this Chairperson, that is, this a man can be a sex worker, and then it is a sex worker how? I get it from them because they are also here. I'll be told that those who come late, a number of them are the sex workers. Also, lastly, Chairperson, is what they are doing, because Chairperson, I heard you when you said that sometimes if someone said there is the money, this is the way, you can do that. But if now you don't have, if you do have money, or you are working in the state company, you'll be your own, become a sex worker? Yes or not? Because really, we have to know something that you did because of what? Or something that you did because Really, you born to be sex worker. You are the sex worker. You are not sex worker because you want money. Because really, I can make a loan now. We can agree with you now, and things change. You are no more there. And then I remain with a problem because it will cascade to your children. I mean your children too. It will cascade to your children because they know that the sex worker is free in South Africa. They can do whatever at whatever time. I thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Khaled, you were the second, but I think you are busy. Maybe we can ask somebody else. Okay, let's ask Honorable Joseph.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I want to thank the organization for sharing with us their experience. I think the engagement with the organization when I joined Fikalela under the leadership of Rachel Mesh. But I think I've heard in the presentation, I just want a few points of clarity, and I want to come back to the HIV/AIDS experience we had in South Africa, which was very traumatic for many people, being rejected and outcast and death penalties on them and so on. And I think we've seen how the country has moved on, that there are human beings, they have rights, and they need to be respected, even in the companies, in the families, in the communities. I think we have that experience, and I think we're almost at the same level when we deal with this issue as to how society feels at the moment, or experience it. And so going to Parliament is right, because we need to find ourselves in the right space at the right time in order to deal with it. I want to ask the organization if they receive funding from the government in terms of health related matters. And then the other point I want to raise is the comment made about managers forced them to do certain actions. Now my question there is, do you enter into a contract with someone and then there's a breach of the contract, or is it a voluntary association that you want to engage in, and then at the point you decide how far you want to engage into that voluntary association? I'd like to know, there was some, in the introduction there was a focus on research, but I didn't the background and the experience, but I also, the document refers to some research relating to countries who have legalized it and some not. There's very few in terms of this document. Because I would like to know, for example, what's the global picture? What is the United Nations saying about it? What is Africa's picture? What is SADC? What is the AU saying about it? Because those are all informed organizations who take up issues on behalf of people, whether it be culture, religion, society, class, you know, those in South Africa in particular, the network around this. I know there are many organizations. And I think by just ending, I want to again relate it to the HIV/AIDS experience. In our country, about 14,000 people die in a year on our roads, and we want to talk about no alcohol when you drive, and people will still die on the roads. You know, with all the key governments making, the people are dying on the roads, 14,000 a year. And even the corporate punishment abolished, whether it was because of apartheid or because of high treason or what, if you take the amount of people that has been killed on a daily basis in this country, it's almost like we feel there is no law like that, you know, the people are just being killed for life is not worth anything. So I think that those experiences that we have will also inform Parliament, but Parliament has the mandate, I think, as the chair said, from the electorate. So it's a process. I'm not sure if it must be a process of a referendum or how to test the opinion, but it's got to start somewhere in the process and then eventually have a result. But I think the fact that we are encouraging each other, I think, is probably more important today in terms of where we are, in terms of opinion. And I think what I've learned today, that is, it is a huge industry with huge challenges. And but everyone, we are all human beings, I think what I've heard, and I think that is what I've heard today.
So I just want to make this comment at this point. I thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Brother. Honourable Tabo, and then Honourable Mbosi.
Thanks. I think I wish to stand on a matter of how, as this committee, should approach this matter. I think it wouldn't be correct for us to pontificate about this issue. Our approach should be somewhat scientific. But objectively, there are certain things that, say for instance, within the sex worker population, almost 60% is HIV positive. And then whether we pontificate, whether we agree with this, with sex work and so on, with the decriminalization of sex work and so on, whether we agree with that, it doesn't matter. The fact is that there is that. It's a fact that there is 60% of it. And then if we ignore that and pretend it does not exist, is that the infection, the rate of infection, it's going to go on. We're not going to tackle the issue of infections if we leave a certain key population with 60%, and then from there pretend that it does not exist. Okay. The other thing is that sex workers are people, and in our constitution they have rights, no matter how the what livelihood option they have chosen. Now, from the constitutional point of view, their rights need to be protected. It's not because, it's simply because they've opted for a particular livelihood option. Then they lose their rights in all the other things. For instance, they need to be denied access to health facilities. They need to be denied access to their constitutional right of recourse to the law and so on and so on. So those are some of the, I think, those are issues that we need to look at. You know, or rather, those are issues that we need to inform our approach. So it's not, we're not here to judge. We are here to look at what it is that we can do in order to deal with. Okay, as a committee, we're looking at the issue of HIV/AIDS. This is one area that does affect the area that we are looking at. And then what is it that we can do in order to mitigate the impact of this fact on the issue of HIV/AIDS? So I think that is what needs to be to get our approach. We're not here to approve or disapprove of sex work and so on. So I think maybe that is my humble advice that we need to refine our approach. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Is your hand up, sir? Oh, long time ago, so I just thought your hand is too short, so I've seen it now. You'll come after me, please. I've seen the another video there. I've seen yours is too long. Sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for you to have arranged this meeting. I think it's one of the important meetings, and thanks for the presentation. I think I'm going to echo what Honorable Tabo has said. We are not here to come and judge and do whatever. Like the chairperson has said, we are not here to legalize, but we are saying that we are aware, and now today you have told us. If ever we suspicion, we didn't know, now we know. And you have come up boldly and tell us this is what we do. And like, I am in this committee, but I am on a health committee again. Now, when sitting here and hearing that, when a person is sick and needs a health a service, she's been discriminated. That's not what health is. And that's not what my minister is advocating at the end of the day. I was so surprised when you said that when you get to the clinic and say that you are a sex worker, you are being discriminated. And I ask myself, I'm a member of parliament, but when I get to the clinic, I don't say that I'm a member of that. I'm somebody who's sick. What I am is not important. But you are there, you are sick, and you need help. And I think, Chairperson, that thing we should take head on with the department. And I think even you, because you are the member of the communities, you, if, according to Batubeli, there is complaint, a suggestion box or complaint, or you have to know, that person who's discriminating you, you have to take the name and take it forward. And another thing you talked about the police, to be saying that you are really being abused by the police. I think at this committee, we have to really look at these two departments and talk about it. Because one thing for sure, like the chairperson has said, you are talking against what it, but the number is increasing. Therefore, it means that talking against it, there is something which you don't do right. Why, if we talk about against it, why when we talk about its immorality, it increases. Therefore, we have to see, like what you have said, to be saying that if it is due to unemployment, if I offer a job, will you get out? But irrespective that some of the sex workers I have learned, it's not to say that they are poor, it's because they've got passion in what they are doing. At the end of the day, we might, but we have to say, do it correct. You talk about yourself, and I think you are an organized organization. I'm from Northwest. I'm from around Rustenburg, Bujanala. But I would say this. How do you go to those unorganized sex workers in Haystack, in Rustenburg? How do you deal with those unorganized sex workers as a mine? Because I always say to the women when I'm with them, there's squatters around the mine, to be saying that to you, to them, that what you are doing, it is sex working. You have left Eastern Gate, you have left Traskai, came with a man here, staying in a mukuku, and you are getting all those things. At the end of the day, you are a sex worker. How do you, like Sonke, you say you are national, how do you involve that person so that you can educate that particular somebody? I have learned that there are those, according to the payment, some will be saying, if it is without a condom, I will give more money. And if it is with condom, I will give you less. How do you deal with those things? How do you educate? And I will even say that, how do you educate me, who is not a sex worker, or who I claim not to be a sex worker, so that I can understand and really help you to advocate? Because as a person, a health professional, and again, a person in the health committee, I have to reduce new infection. If I don't work with you, I won't really reach the goals of reducing the new infection. The trucks in Zirat, there's a truck, truck stop, and it's too heavy. It's just like, I cannot drive at Haystack in Rustenburg.
at night without people coming to my car. I cannot drive past a zebra and not see what is happening at that truck stop. How do you help those poor women who are there because of whatever? How do you really deal with them? I think really we have to have this connection so that because I've been sent here by the community, I'm a community representative, I even represent the sex workers as a member of parliament. Therefore, I have to go back and really advocate, because I am saying that I'm not a judge. At the end of the day, I have to do something another way around so that this thing mustn't go on if I don't like it to go. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. We are a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And some of the laws that we have were done without a government of the people, by the people, for the people. It doesn't mean we don't have to relook at them and see whether there's something. But the most important thing for us as members of parliament is to make sure that whatever happens in South Africa doesn't threaten the security of South Africa, prolongs the life of South Africans. So if anything that seems to be going against that, that's where we've got to make laws to make sure that that doesn't happen. Now, we've been worried about HIV and AIDS. And the statistics that we got from SANAC, and which have been confirmed by you, tell us that there is a problem. But that is something that we need to discuss. We need to be mature about it, not label people and say, this is the situation, this is the honest situation. It's up to you to take the right or left, but this is the information. Honorable Motsepe, because Honorable Tivida has to finish, she gives you that.
Thank you, Chairperson. My colleague was saying lots about some of my questions. I was having a concern when we are looking for the numbers of sex workers at the place where there are boundaries, like Limpopo, 10%. Mpumalanga, it can't be 10%. Because there are boundaries, there are lots of trucks every Friday. And while my colleagues were saying the money is not the same when we are using this and when we are not doing this. You know, democracy is something else. When I grow up, I can't talk, we're not talking about this. Because my granny, she will hit you until you say, Mama, the Copa Soare. But now, this is a democracy. When you go to Tshwane in the evening, there are lots of sex workers. There is a other language they say is men to men. There are also sex workers. Now, I just want to sweet to share with us. Did they check the age of young people when they come to join them? And the other issue that make me not happy is that they talk about the neighbors. What about your family? How do they treat you? Like Mama, we are having the social club, we are having the society, we are having maybe something on the street, they say, let's say a funeral or a party. When you enter there, how do people take you? They take you as a woman being. And then, but other people, the neighbors, they are fighting with your kids. Because, like, the second person you can hear, the neighbors, they don't like the sex workers' kids because 1, 2, 3. Like, when you talk about my name, just go there. When people realize that my name is whatever, they will hate me, and they will not come into a house to visit me. Maybe let's be the last
the chairperson talking about the, that name. Please, chairperson. you know, when we, I'm going Limpopo. You know when you go to Limpopo? And lots of track are busy. There is a small F. Ke mo dilo di etsagalang teng mo ofiso ke go na le mo dilo di etsagalang teng. Are you covered those people? Those people who are going Lesotho, going to Mpumalanga, the cross border. Maybe you must check that number. It can't be. Gauteng, it can't be. There is no border in Gauteng. There is no border in Gauteng. Where this number come from? There is a sex worker who are coming from other provinces working at Limpopo at Gauteng because there's lots of gold. Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I'll come again.
Thank you. Members and everybody who's here, because it's a Friday, we want to leave early. We're not going to have a formal tea, but there is tea. So if people could just quietly sneak off and go and have tea and come back and eat. That's what Honorable de Villiers was doing. So we could continue to that, because we're not going to have a formal tea. So we're going to continue doing that type of thing. Honorable de Villiers.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I want to be very positive in this situation. And it's good that we do have this presentation this morning, because a lot of information given this morning I did not have in the past. It opened to me personally a whole new world about the situation. Now my question to our presenters, Honorable Chairperson, is why you're saying that 0.5% of these sex workers don't have the support or the use of access to our institutions who are supplying them with HIV medicine. Let me just call it that situation. And then the other one is also, do you have a certain office or building where you actually give the service delivery to, one, the sex workers, and two, how you plan to outreach into the community to uplift and open and educate the community understanding in the situation of sex workers? Because what I'm hearing here, there's a lot of aggression in some communities. The place where I'm living, I do not experience that situation, because we have a different approach, and we understand the situation of sex workers, and we also understand the illegal situation of sex workers. But there is also a lack of the support to those people in the business and also to the communities, and I understand also from the education side, as a previous teacher, we also have certain problems with children of sex worker or sex workers. And then at that school, we have also a different approach to educate the learners also and tell them what's actually happening. Then my other question, Honorable Chairperson, is in connection with the illegal situation of this industry. My question is, do you know that you can also come up with a private member's bill, and why I did not see any of that in the parliamentary situation? Because you know better in this connection than me as a member of parliament. And then the other one, in connection with the support from government, I just want to elaborate on that question. The one is, Honorable Chairperson, is how much support did you get from government? And can you just give us more information on that information, relative information concerning that situation? And then my last one, Honorable Chairperson, very last question. We as members of parliament must say to ourselves, and me as the member of the select committee serving on health, heard this morning there's a problem with our workers at those clinics. I must go back and address that situation, and my colleague in the National Assembly talk about it. And also the police, we must then also approach our police department and also the judiciary, so that this is a given situation. It's not a situation where you can just say tomorrow it will just, they will just go away. We must try to address that problem in the best situation where we can do it. And then, Honourable Chairperson, we as members of Parliament do have a huge work now on our shoulders to see how we can actually give support, especially in the situation of the HIV/AIDS and so on, and other illnesses concerning the sex work. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable De Villiers. Members, I'm trying to lobby you. I don't know whether you're going to be lobbied. I didn't seem to like having a hand up. I'm trying to lobby you that we don't have another round. We just allow them to answer, and then we'll call it a day. But I want to say, there's a saying that, oh, you want to come better? Okay. You know, there was an issue.
From the issues that have been mentioned, there are can be categorized as some things that can be we can be dealt with immediately, and then others that are medium to long term, like decriminalization. I think that it will take a lot of education of people, I mean, to achieve that. And then after that, then you can do the specially tailored services for sex workers that can only follow after criminalization. But there are those that are immediate, like denial of access to services, like rights violation, and so on. So if this can be sort of put as immediate issues that have to be dealt with, and then would be enumerated properly, I think that is one. And then the other thing was the range of services. Of services, say for instance, within LB. Now, does SWET cover also people who are not full time in the I don't know whether to call it profession, who are full time in the profession, or those it covers also those who render maybe working in another field, but then I don't know what they call it, but there are those who are on call. Yeah, those who are on call. They are called upon by even big companies. I know they do that. When they have visitors from overseas or when they have special occasions, they need hostesses. Then they approach some madam somewhere, and then the madam has people that she can call upon to act as hostesses. The hostesses will be paid for being there, but then they also offer extra services under this concept. So, but does SWET also cover this? Those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we agree, member, that we're not going to ask any questions. We'll just allow them to answer questions and we'll call it a day. I think we are not here to say right or wrong. For us, it's just to listen, because they've got challenges that they said, let's help these people. So we just need to be honest, humble, and be open-minded, and be rational in our thinking. Probably we might not even make recommendations, but the basic part here, which I've heard to members, the basic part is that these have been regarded as a criminal offense. Now, if it's a criminal offense, now the police, they have got to do a job. If I'm stealing somebody's things, they've got to take me to jail. But the problem here is that in doing so, they abuse the security. They go beyond what they're supposed to do, and they even ask for favors. But I don't think we should think that the police are doing the wrong thing by catching somebody who's doing something that they have been told that is illegal. They're doing the right thing by dealing with that. But when they do other things, then that's when it becomes a problem, it becomes a challenge. And I think this criminal part of it, that's what has made it go underground. And they say, if you don't know something, you're not going to be able to treat it. And we don't know how big the problem, because a lot of people, because it's criminal, they don't want to come up and say, look, this situation, they keep quiet because it's criminal, they go underground. So we don't know how big the problem is, and it's very difficult. I mean, as a doctor, I can't treat something that I don't know. I've got to make a diagnosis first. If I can't make a diagnosis, I might as well forget that I can treat that particular condition. I think this is what we're dealing with. But I still think the question that I was asking is still very important. But I always believe, I'm coming from rural areas, I always believe that nobody's going to tell me about my location, how to handle situation there. And I'm doing what I think is right for that place. So, and I don't want to compare myself with anybody because the conditions are not the same. So, but if you could answer that particular question as to, if I'm hungry, if I'm poor, I don't know what I'm going to do the next day, would I make a rational decision at that particular time? Even if I'm an adult, I must be stress-free, I must be comfortable to make a decision and be informed about something and make my own decision in a respected manner. But we are saying, we know we are human beings, we've got to be rational, we've got to be open-minded. We need you, and we need to discuss with you so that we could move forward. So you can respond to those questions and start the responses. Then it might just be a few follow-ups, and then we'll call it a day.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the questions. They're all very relevant, and I'm glad they'll add to our discussion. I'm going to just deal with the technical questions, and I'm going to hand over to my colleagues to deal with your other questions. In terms of funding, I just wanted to say, as SWET, we do get money from the Western Cape Provincial Department of Health to support just our Western Cape office. And we have gotten money from the National Lotteries this year. And that allowed us to buy another outreach van, which is very useful for our Cape Town office. So we're very grateful for that support from the South African context. And our other donors are international donors. So we do get money from the Global Fund for our national project, the Global Fund to Fight HIV, TB and Malaria. And we get money from other international donors as well to undertake our work. We are trying to cover as many areas as we can with that support. And like Maria said, we are going to increase our national work from 8 sites, including Limpopo. So we do know the areas that you have mentioned, and also Rustenburg. We have a project in Rustenburg. But we're hoping to upscale those programs so that we can adequately cover the areas that you have mentioned. Some of the other technical questions around what others are saying about this issue, international, regional and so on bodies. The Commission on Gender Equality just last week released a policy paper in support of decriminalisation and acknowledging much of the struggles that sex workers have. So we're very happy that there is some movement in that respect. COSATU have also a resolution in support of decriminalisation and in support of sex workers themselves. WHO in December released a policy brief that also recommended that states decriminalise sex work.
in order to address HIV and for a public health argument. And the Commonwealth heads of government have also done so. There is also a very important process that happened last year that was discussing HIV, the Global Commission on HIV and the Law. And they addressed sex work as an issue, and that report is available and a very useful document to look at, especially since they spoke to so many people, including sex workers, across the world and in South Africa and Africa as well. So that was a very important process that happened last year, and their report is a very useful document. So there is important movements in this area that we are very pleased about and that do support our arguments for decriminalisation. And I think it's also important to note that because it's not, it used to be, like we said, something you didn't talk about. But now, more and more, there is more conversations happening. There's more evidence that we can base our thoughts on as well. And I think that's a very important advancement. In terms of other legal frameworks, we talked about New Zealand, where New Zealand decriminalised in 2003, but also much smaller population, far less HIV, far less unemployment and poverty. There are also other models in other countries ranging from highly criminalised, like our context, to criminalising sex work, but not sex workers. So in other words, criminalising buying of sex, brothels, third parties, but not selling sex. Our opinion is that we need to find an African solution that suits our context, that looks at our HIV pandemic, that looks at STIs, that looks at our human rights context, the gender inequality that we have in this country, the high levels of violence that we have in this country, and find a solution that works for us in our context. And we can certainly learn from others. The New Zealand example is a very important lesson. In Australia, for instance, and I will send through this report, there was a comparison of different legal models. Because in one country, they have many different legal models. They have decriminalization, they have partial criminalization, and they have full criminalization. And they compared each of those models for health outcomes and also human rights outcomes. And they found that decriminalization was the one with the best outcomes for sex workers. And I think for us, our priority should be sex workers. They are the most vulnerable in the situation. And we have acknowledged as a country that that we value equality and that women are an important area that we need to address as far as equality is concerned. There were some other questions that I think my colleagues will cover more fully than I would. But just to say that one of the things that we'd like the committee to think about really is supporting the National Sex Work Program. It is a document that is based on evidence that covers all of these service areas that we've already spoken about and that is in a process of being finalised at this point. So it needs support and it needs vocal support as well. The other thing that we're wanting to ask is to support decriminalisation, to look at the evidence for decriminalisation and to consider decriminalisation as a model for South Africa. The other thing that we want to ask the committee to do is want, in whatever endeavours it undertakes, to listen to the voices of sex workers and to ensure that sex workers are central in whatever consultations result from this process. And then we'd like to invite you to visit our offices, to come on outreach, to come, we have vans that go out on outreach, if you'd like to come and join us, we'd be happy. We also have workshops, weekly workshops, come and join us and to see what we do firsthand. We'd be happy to host you. And so I'd like to hand it over to my colleagues in the, to live true to the Nothing About Us Without Us slogan.
Thank you. May I? Hi, good honourable chairs. Firstly, I'd like to apologise for us being late. You know, the struggle of South African time continues. Nevertheless, we are very happy, and we are very happy and honoured that you have given us the opportunity to be here, to meet with you and to discuss these issues, which I think are very relevant in our country. As the Honourable Chair said, it's about the longevity of South Africans. It's about long life. It's about health. And that is the issue. It is unfortunate, however, that I'll be coming to answer a question now for Honorable Chair from Mpumalanga. I just want to mention we didn't ask for HIV-TB. And I'm sure you can agree that, as the Honorable Chair did, that the member said, why do you come to us? Why do you come pressure us? I'm on your question, Honorable Member. Why do you come now to run to us and to pressure us? I think I can answer that by saying, Honorable Member, because we have a greater burden and a greater pressure that is not upon us, that is upon our nation, and it's called HIV-TB. And I think the relevant answer would be, we'd rather run to a council that is involved with HIV and TB, a council that has wisdom, a council that can guide us and tell us what their thoughts are, because we know without this council, we can't really do much, can we? Nevertheless, on your question, again, Honourable Member, you said now, how would I be a male sex worker? I think probably the same way that a woman can be a female sex worker. It basically is the same thing. But what it boils down to is not the strategicness or the technicalities of how I find a client, etc. I think I like to round it around the point of being none of us in the chambers have got the same lives that we live. We all have different circumstances. We all have different surroundings. It's unfortunate. It's not like, why? We are who we are. It won't make any difference if I say today, I wish I was a member of the parliament who sorted out, drives a nice car, who had money, and I didn't have to be a sex worker. That's not going to help me any. Who I am is who I am. And my situation, I cannot blame it on someone else. All I know is at the time of my distraught, at the time of my mother dying, at the time of whatever reason, there wasn't a flag or a neon light that said, hey, little boy, come this way. We'll give you lots of funds. Here's a house. Here's a car. Here's this. There wasn't. And as you know, that's not how it works. And specifically at that time, member, you know, when you find yourself in a situation, it is unfortunate, but what do? You know, sometimes you do have things that you can hustle and sell and stand on the corner with fruit or whatever. Sometimes you don't. And when you really don't have anything and you look around you and you find that maybe you do have something. If it's your looks, if it's your good performance and you're good with sex, you know what? Well, at least I've got a place to sit because I've got a 500 rand in my pocket and I can pay to stay the night and I can buy myself a loaf of bread. It's not generally what happens with everyone. Like I say, we all different lives, but different sex workers do things for different reasons. But I'm not saying rule out the people who have these reasons. My reason is that was my survival. I'm not judging it over anyone. I'm just saying who I am, a sex worker. What I believe is to defend the rights of sex workers. What I am is proudly South African. My constitution says to me in the second chapter in the Bill of Rights, I have the right to dignity. It says to me, I have a right to freedom. It says to me, I have the right to choose, like each and every one of us. So I ask, my question to you, Honorable Member, is this: what is wrong in me defending the rights of others? Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. I'm on the question from Honorable saying that it's not a question, it's a comment, that no one is allowed to go out naked. And I also believe that there is a Bible saying that not binding sex with a bundle, even you, honorable, you cannot walk out of it like naked, and it's indecency. So you can also have the right to work as work, but not to work naked on the street. So then they can be like penalized or decriminalized or criminalized. And you said sex worker has a sex with you, and then at the end of the day when they don't get paid, they go around to the police station and say that they are raped. And I also believe that in marriage, when you, I think people, they also have a right, married people, they also have a right to go and lay a charge against their husband saying that they have been raped. Because there isn't a consent. If you touch me without my consent, and then that is rape, and you brought an agreement that you were going to have me, it is rape. That's what I believe. Thank you.
Yes, I saw your mother minute trying to talk. Oh, somebody wants to tell the back before you come, mother.
Good morning, Honorable Jeff. Good morning, all of us. Good afternoon. Good morning. I just want to talk about what your Honorable on the Yalski system. I'm a transgender woman. I'm not gay. And I'm not strict. I have the right to live my life the way I feel is comfortable for me. But in the healthcare system, in all the healthcare systems, it is so stigmatized against a female sex worker, a male sex worker, and a transgender sex worker. The stigma and the challenge and barriers that we have to go through in the healthcare system is for no eyes and no ears to hear. Your honorables are not there when their time happens. You are not there that they feel that they make you so small. They take their last shame of dignity away from you in front of a whole community, who take it out to a broader community. What else do you have to do? Go back and love there. I'd rather pick up and go out and move somewhere else where people accept me for who I am. I can love leave for what I want to go, want to come. Then the healthcare service from the reception to the doctor. Your name is so shame and blame on it. The word they have spoken to. They now even got their own lines where the ARV people have to sit, where the HIV TB have to sit. In the older days, it wasn't like HIV, TB, or diabetic people, some headline and deadline. Everybody was born together. Everybody goes their separate ways. But nowadays, they have that knowledge to shout it over the intercom. All people come for ARV, all people coming for condoms, or you are sex, or you're coming for condoms. But condoms can be used for many things. And they strip you really of that dignity. Where are you those days when you really have to go through this pain? It's hurt, it's a burden upon yourself. And to love, how can you love if poverty is so bad in our country? You have to make some way of survival. A 200-300 rand per hour, an hour for me is a lot of money. Because tomorrow I can buy me a new outfit. I can sit next to a wimp in a coffee counter. Tonight I can look nice for another client, because I'm a sex worker, educator. And my job is to go out there and inform, educate the unfortunate. Even I'm a member of the Umzigela drama group, or SWED. We go out to communities, to healthcare, to police stations. We do drama on real-life drama stories that sex workers bring to us, that they wrote down, being recorded. We perform it out in dramas, in the problematic areas, in clinics, where people are so stigmatized against sex workers and their children. We just show them that we are human beings too, but we got only different needs. So do not judge, because your judge has already been judged. So why to judge others? We didn't say you have to ignore that, but it's the issue that needs to be raised. And if you come to our care service, you only come for AIDS. There's not TB, there's not a flu, there's not you need a Jackson, you're not come diabetes, whatever. Because you're a morphine. You're a sex worker, you're a prostitute, like they call in communities. But they forget You are human too. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I see there's a lot of things that are coming. The problem is time. I don't think we'll be able to entertain all the hands. So can you bear with us? Maybe we'd need another time that we're going to sit and talk about it. And in fact, there's one thing that seems to be coming up, which is worrying me, because it says, I joined because I didn't have money. I think this is what I was trying to talk about when I said, do you make an informed, well-decided decision when you are stressed? When I know that I'm not going to have 3 meals, but I don't know where I'm going to eat, the decision that I make at that time, would you take it very serious? Because I did it very stressed. I mean, it's like in hospital, when somebody comes in thinking that he's got a heart attack, the concern that that person gives you, can you stand by it and say, this is the right concern, yet the person was very stressed? But it doesn't matter. I think we'll have fun. Why don't we allow just 2 people, and then we call it a day? The hand of Maslamin has always been there, and then the hand close to me is that, I'm not sure, okay, let's make it that you are good with the last one, okay, Maslamin, you are going to be shot, and you are going to be shot at Maslamin. Okay, thank you, Maslamin.
Thank you. I'm coming to you. I will try to make it sure that I'll try to cover up all your questions. The first one, I won't answer because...
Stephen, can they really address the house, not individual?
Okay.
That's important, madam, because he was asking as a member of the committee, so you go through the chair.
Yeah, I was trying to go by step by step. I've got your own question, man. I'll be in the landing now. But I'll address the whole committee. In the question of no one has the right to go naked, as we stronger, we do understand that, and we not allow it. The try we mobilizing strong Orthodox workers to become a member. Where is the stronger? We do have a firm way of saying we do have protocols that you have to follow. The protocol that you are a member of the stronger. I'm not allowed when I'm doing my work at the rolling, flashing, showing my body parts. That is the first thing we're doing. The try is in the sex industry. That it was got protocols. The other one, complain to the police, the rape. This is my right to do that. It's everyone's right. But if I'm not comfortable, a man do something that I don't like, I don't feel like, this is every woman has a right to go and report, and a police must do their job to take the statement. If it's supposed to be going forward to the court, we must go forward to the court. The other question that I will answer to H. We consider and we focus it in adult sex workers, not underage sex workers. Yes, when we do outreach, we come across with young children in the sex industry, but we're working hand to hand with Hawks and Amics to assist us what we're supposed to do, what is the follow-up must be done for the young children. But the center is not dealing with young or underage sex workers. Everyone must be over 18. But we refer it in social development. Why are we paying more? To pay more without condom or paying less with the condom? It's a situation of criminalization where criminalization allows clients to take advantage to smart sex workers. Practical example, as we see song, we're always doing outreach and educate them why you're supposed to do it, why it's important to use a condom. So if the sex worker is standing in the corner almost 5 hours or 6 hours,
running away from polygamy. There is a time where client is stopped and pick up the cell and say, you know what, I saw the police or law enforcement down the street, I have to take you, I have to run, and you have to run, and he will offer you without condom. And then you're running away from police, and you get into that situation. But we're always telling them that if you do without condom, you put yourself in a high risk. That's what we make sure that we leave you with a packet of feedback, that we have all tools that you wear as we come.
Madam, if you could round up, because time is totally up.
Okay, I'll leave. Which one?
It's even out of the room now.
To answer that question, what I can say, yes, I work as an organizer, but sex work allows me if I work at 10% of demand. So I'm going there. It's okay for me to go there, but it depends on you what you think. There is those are getting job, and then when they get permanent and they quit exit, but it depends on you. But me, myself, I'm working as an organizer. But at the same time, I'm still in the street. I do have also regular clients, so I'm still operating my business. So it depends on you. This is your choice, what you're supposed to do. This is your option.
Thanks, Madam. Maya, one, I'm going to be short.
As a mother, I'm a married woman. I've got 5 girls, and they are married. My daughter, one of my daughters, are married to a pastor. Then my father was asking me that if you are a sex worker, what about your children? How do you think about... That is why I want to tell her that my children are married, and then they respect me. They don't know that I'm a sex worker. They just know that I'm a mother. And in my community, people respect me because I'm not going naked the way they say people are going naked on the street. How can you be naked on the street? I just go the way I am. And then my mother was married to... My father see my mother with a dress. I can't let the man see me naked because he will never love me if I'm naked. I must wear, then the man will see that is a real woman, and then men choose me because I'm looking very decent, and then they buy me. Any woman can do what they want to do with her body. This is my body and my business. I'm a mother. I'm a human being. Thank you.
Back to the sponsor.
Yes.
You are the last one.
I'm the last one.
Short test.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Member. Good afternoon, all. I'm referring to the question from Rebecca about how do families feel. We come from different homes, very, very different. Some come from poor family, some come from the upper-due family. Maybe I am the fortunate one, I come from that good family. But when I started sex work, I was very afraid. I had to hide the money in my pocket, and my mother was a school teacher and my father. But I'm just the one who came out differently. And when time goes by, I'm not a liar, I like to be honest, when time goes by, I had to tell my mother what I was doing. And my mother cried a bit, and she accepted it. But some working girls, they come from different homes, and then where they can be chased out of home because of the sex work. And I don't know, I think we don't have to blame anybody but ourselves, because we chose the work we are doing. And the work we are doing, we are not ashamed of it. We call it, it's work, because this is work. Thank you very much.
Members, that those were the responses, but I don't think we've had enough. So probably we would need another time so that we could further engage. Can you allow me to probably try and round up and say, you cannot handle something that you don't know. You've got to have information, but you've got to be mature enough not to be subjective in your decision and your recommendation, but to be objective. Obviously, the key point here is the criminal part of it, which unfortunately, all the challenges that are coming from the fact that it has been criminalized. And what I'm not sure about is it whether is it in the right committee to look at that decriminalization, or there are other committees that would handle that. But what is affecting our committee is the fact that a lot of HIV positivity is actually coming from, this is one of the areas where HIV positivity in South Africa is coming from. So we definitely need to do something as this committee in our oversight and see how things are done so that we can mitigate against the HIV positivity. Because all we're doing is just oversighting, and we're looking at how can we reduce the HIV positivity in South Africa. Because that's what is threatening the security of South Africa. That's what is threatening the economy of South Africa. So we are here as neutral objects, as people who are just mature, who are neither this side nor that side, but all we're saying is that we want to know what's happening, so that when we are, we have got to make a decision, we are fully informed as to what's happening. Thank you very much, sir, for coming and giving us information. We've got the information. We are going to think about it, but there are no clear recommendations that we're going to come with, because we just want the information. So now we know, and we'll be able to talk about it freely. Members, thank you very much for coming, especially on a Friday. I think we want to allow you early to go back home so that you could think about this thing. There is an invitation from Shadi, but I'm hoping that when you go there, you won't go as clients to that home to see what happens. You go and see what's happening.